Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host. So happy you're joining me today. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. We had two Grand Prix over the weekend, and it was so fun to see those pan out. It was limited, and I just want to give a shout-out to Andrew Cuneo, who got first place at GP Indianapolis. Well done. Super awesome. And also, Ely Cassis, he got eighth place. He's a past guest of the show, episode 101 and episode 206. How cool is that? Then over in Europe, we had GP Metz, and congrats to Martin Yuza and Christopher Larson, both past guests of the show, both made it into the top eight of the Grand Prix. So Martin Yuza has episode 211, and Christopher Larson is episode 114. So how cool is that? We had some past guests go off and do great things. It's always fun to watch them do that. And this weekend, we have the opportunity to see two more Grand Prix. There's GP DC here in the States and GP Turin. So that should be really cool. I always love the competitive seasons. It's always great to see what players around the world do and see who makes it to the top. I'm super excited to reach out to the top eight of each of these two Grand Prix. There's a lot of new faces, and it's going to be really fun to hear their story as well. So before we dive into today's interview, I want to say thank you so much to the patrons who support the show. Because of you, this show is possible. They're the ones that keep things going. And as a thank you, each and every month, we give away a patron exclusive prize. This month, we are going to be giving away a commander deck. So whoever wins the drawing for this month, I'll be reaching out to them and saying, hey, which commander deck do you want out of the new ones that just came out? And we will be sending them that. When I say we, I mean me and Paragon City Games, the other proud sponsor of the show. ParagonCityGames.com is where you can check out what they have going on. They do Magic the Gathering community building the right way. And they are a fantastic pillar of sportsmanship and goodwill and just doing great things here in the community. So check out ParagonCityGames.com, and thank you, PCG, for providing the prize support for not only the patrons, but also the sealed league that we have and, you know, the other fun giveaways that we do here on the show. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But that's really it for the top of the interview stuff. Other than, I guess, a quick reminder, if you're interested in MTG Pro Tutor t-shirts, those are up and ready at mtgpro2.com/t-shirt. So if you want one, go check it out. But that's really it. So let's bring in our great guest, sit down and talk about some magic. What's up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest has played on several Pro Tours and has won one Grand Prix at GP Toronto. Coming to us from Montreal, Canada, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Robert Anderson. Robert, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Robert, we are going to get him into the Prodigy Facebook group. So hop on Facebook, join the group. He'll be in there. You can do a post and tag him in it and ask him a question or say thanks for being on the show. But that is the best way to get a hold of him. So, Robert, first and foremost, let's talk about outside of Magic before we do the inside Magic stuff. Are you born and raised in Montreal?
Yes, I have been. I've lived in Montreal my whole life. I lived with my parents at first, and then moved around, still always in Montreal. Now I'm more on the west island. Montreal's an island for people who don't really know, and I'm on sort of the west side. The downtown is sort of like the middle to east area a bit more. I've been in Montreal my whole life, but I have traveled a lot, and Montreal's a great city.
Yeah, that's cool. And growing up, do you have siblings that you played games with, or did you do that with your parents, or did the gaming bug come from somewhere else?
I have an older brother who he got me sort of. Well, my parents bought us a Nintendo for my fourth birthday, and that kind of basically was it for me. And I was just a gamer since then. Nice. And I'm a major video gamer, but I started playing Magic. Some friends from elementary school introduced me when I was about 10, and I basically played since then. I did stop a couple of times. The first time I quit was after I bought four Tolarian Academies, and then they banned them like the week after.
Aww.
And I was just like, okay, I'm done with this game. And so I didn't play for after Urza's Saga. I stopped, and I didn't play any Mass Block or Invasion Block, but or Odyssey Block, really. But then I was in college at that point, and I had some friends who were playing, like, right around when Onslaught came out. And I got back in, and I've basically been playing ever since.
Cool. So back when you first were introduced to the game, what was your first set? Do you remember?
Revised.
Wow, dang. Yeah. Do you still have your collection from back then, or when you got out?
Yeah. Oh, I traded all my dual lands for Sheevan Dragons. And that's what kids did back then.
Good choice.
Yeah. I still remember the first game I ever played. I went Swamp, and then I tapped it for a Dark Ritual. Then I tapped the Dark Ritual for 3 mana, and then next turn I tapped the Dark Ritual for 3 more mana and tapped my Swamp again to make 7 to cast Lord of the Pit. So
perfect.
I didn't really know how to play, but I got a Lord of the Pit out on turn 2, and I kind of ignored the whole part about having to sacrifice a creature every turn, and I won pretty fast.
Yeah, it went pretty well for you. That's funny. You are not the only person who said that they tapped Dark Ritual, over and over again for madness. That's pretty funny.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Huh. Like it's always so fun to hear the stories from back in the day. People, or rather from people who were learning. For example, like foil lands tap for 2 mana. I've heard that one before too. That's pretty.
Oh,
funny.
Really?
Yeah. But like I said, someone else, I forget who it was, but they said, yeah, Dark Ritual would stay on the battlefield and tap for 3 every turn. I'm like, oh, well, I guess.
Yeah, we used to be able to play as many lands as you want, I've and then at the too. End of the turn, you draw back up to 7.
Oh, nice. Just get the game going, we got to get stuff on the field, clash into each other.
This turn 1 to 3 doing nothing is no fun.
That's pretty fun. So what's been your favorite set since you played?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess I should have seen that coming. I really liked, I would say Innistrad.
Ooh, why?
Original Innistrad. I really like Limited. And as far as draft formats go, Innistrad is like the only format I remember where you can draft multiple versions of aggro, combo, and control. And they were all viable archetypes, and it was just super fun. Mm. Like, I love drafting triple Innistrad. With Dark Ascension, it was okay too, but I preferred triple Innistrad. And I don't know, I've always been drawn to the whole sort of dark occult theme, and I always thought it's a very flavorful set. There's so much stuff going on, and I just had a really good time with that.
Cool. Is Limited your best format?
I would say Limited is my best format. Then after that, probably Modern, and then I've never done fantastically in Standard. I mean, I think I won one old school PTQ playing Standard, but most of my wins were with Limited and Modern.
Well, we'll definitely dive into that in just a minute here. But along the same lines of favorites, what is one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards. I actually really like, it's kind of a weird card, but Calcite Snapper is a really fun card.
Wow. What is that for those like me who don't know what it is? What does it do and why do you like it?
It is a World Wake common. It's a 1/4 for blue and a colorless. It has Shroud and it has a landfall ability that lets you switch its power and toughness. So it's really interesting because I like to play control decks, and I've had so many decks. I think that it was actually my friend Samuel Tharmaratnam that sort of got me onto Calcite Snapper, but there are so many control and combo decks that I would have 4 Calcite Snappers in the sideboard, and then you play it on turn 3, and then all of a sudden, like, it's unkillable because it has Shroud, and you can just keep beating for 4 as long as you have lands to play. And it actually, it's just funny to see people who, like I played it in the sideboard of Pyromancer Ascension. You know, you don't expect to get beat down after board playing against like a combo deck, but sometimes I just like cards that come out of nowhere like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Calcite Snapper. That's really
cool. It's been a little bit replaced by Geist of Xaintrap. Like a lot of control decks have like the Geist plan in the sideboard now, where you just like bring in 4 Geist and attack for 6. But that's what it was back then.
Interesting. That's cool. That's really cool. So as you got more into Magic, what was an aspect that you really struggled with, or something that you were terrible at but that you eventually overcame?
Well, I think a lot of the factors of the mental game in general, it's still something that I struggle with. I think a lot of people struggle with it. I'm a lot better than I used to be, but there's generally just like it's pretty easy to be negative playing Magic. There's a lot of times that, you know, you're just destined to lose and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, you get mana screwed, you get mana flooded. Sometimes, like, you pick the perfect deck for the tournament that has, like, one bad matchup, and then you go against everyone in the room playing your bad matchup, and they were, like, the only people in the room playing it. You know, like, a lot of things happen. And I used to get pretty discouraged, and when I would do badly in a tournament, I'd be like, man, like, sometimes, like, I would say things like, oh, sometimes this game infuriates me, or things like that. And I kind of, like, I think that as far as the game has treated me, I'm probably above average as far as luck is concerned. Like, I know several people who are much better than me who have had less success, or not necessarily less success, but haven't had, like, a breakthrough win or, like, a big top eight or anything like that. And, the person that I actually played a lot with growing up was Alex Hain, who's, you know, a superstar. And we were playing, not as, like, super young kids, but, like, pretty young, like, around a Time Spiral block. We met at a card store, and we played together and tested, and we would always go to PTQs together. And back then, obviously, it was 100 plus people, and you had to win first place. And I won 3 PTQs before Alex won any. He was always top eighting, and he was always, like, he lost so many finals. It was just heartbreaking. Like, he was such a good player.
Yeah.
And someone like me, who is, like, nowhere near as good as he is, was, like, getting there, and he wasn't. And, I mean, I'm sure for him it was, like, super frustrating. But eventually, he, you know, got there. He won a PTQ. He went to Pro Tour Philadelphia. Well, that was actually the one Pro Tour. Well, one, actually, we've been to a few Pro Tours together, but that was our first Pro Tour that we went together. And then after that, he got second in GP Montreal, and then he went on to, like, you know, win a Pro Tour and just be one of the top players. So, you know, that's just one of the things that sometimes you just have to, like, even when you keep getting beaten down over and over again, like someone like Alex, like, he never gave up, and eventually it balanced out. You know,
Thank you for sharing that. That's really neat. He is a great player. He's a past guest of the show, also back on episode 28, actually. So way back in the day. Yeah. Just for the record, you are going to be episode 230. So been a while. Yeah. About time to probably have him back on. But yeah, that's really neat. And I love that you walked through that and shared, you know, that it's easy. What stood out to me, you said, you know, it's easy to be negative in Magic. And so just kind of, keeping an eye on that and focusing on not being negative, focusing on being positive, you know, and understanding that, you know, there are things that you can do to, you know, combat that, and just keeping up, you know. I think that's really good insights.
Yeah. It's impossible to play perfectly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, there's some tournaments that you're going to lose no matter how well you play. But even when you lose, try to think about maybe something you could have done better. Right. And sometimes you did, like, almost everything great and you lost, but, you know, sometimes there's things to learn. Even when you 0-3 a tournament and feel like you had no chance, like, sometimes there's something to learn.
So what have been some of your major, like, Magic milestones that you look back on and can pinpoint as, you know, big moments for you?
Well, definitely winning my first PTQ.
Okay.
Which was Zendikar Limited. It was triple Zendikar. And just, I find, like, in Magic, there's a lot of sort of leveling up. You know, you start, when you decide you want to be a competitive player, and then you start grinding tournaments. I mean, it is different now than it used to be. But back then, you know, Zendikar Limited, it was just like an old school PTQ. There was like 150 people. I was really sick. I was on, like, a bunch of pills, like, cough, like, medicine and stuff in the top eight. And I drafted, like, it's just super aggressive, almost mono black vampire deck. And in the finals, I went against somebody who had a much better deck than me, but I played well, and I managed to, like, make it to the Pro Tour. And, you know, just, I, for the record, I've been to, like, 6 or 7 Pro Tours. I've never done very well. There was only one Pro Tour that I cashed. But honestly, for people who haven't been there, just going is just such an experience. Yeah. Like, every time I go to the Pro Tour, even when I just like scrub out on day one, I still like have a blast, you know. And you know, you can go back on day two, and they like Wizards like gives you all kinds of stuff to do, just free drafts and all kinds of great stuff. And I've actually been quite lucky with where I've gone for Pro Tours as well. Like my first Pro Tour was in San Diego, and nice. Then I went to Amsterdam, and then the Pro Tour that I actually did not do great at, the Pro Tour that I did the best at was Philadelphia, which was, you know, not the most exciting place to go as a Canadian, but like
right.
know, I did pretty well. And then I've been to Hawaii twice. I cheated going to one Pro Tour. It was the one Pro Tour where Planeswalker points were able to get you an invite if you were in the top 100 in the world or something like that.
Interesting.
And I've worked at face-to-face games for the past like 6 years. And so as an employee there, since I was already at a card store after my shift, I was just playing tournaments every day and managed to get enough Planeswalker points to be in the top 100 to get a free trip to Hawaii.
Nice.
So yeah, that was a huge mistake on Wizards' part. They got rid of that immediately, but yeah. I took advantage while it was there.
That's cool. I did forget to ask about if, you know, Magic is all you do, if you're working and all that good stuff. And so it sounds like you work at Pace Space currently?
Yeah, I'm cool. the inventory manager. I've been there for, like I said, for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Not since its inception, but pretty, like I started working there about 3 or 4 years after the store opened. Like it started at a small location and then it moved to a bigger location, and right when they moved to the bigger location, that's when they needed more staff and stuff, and that's when I started working there. And then from there, you know, we expanded, and now we're just like very serious about everything.
Yeah,
when it comes to Magic.
Man, that is really neat. That's cool that you're able to stay connected to the game in, you know, all aspects of your life. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's basically everything I do. I go to work dealing with Magic, and I come home and I play Magic online, and you know, play Magic on weekends when my girlfriend lets me, and that's basically it.
So what does an inventory manager do?
Well, I do all the orders for the store. Well, there's the online store and there's the store itself, and I basically make sure that both stores are stocked as far as inventory is concerned. I do a lot of logistical stuff. I do finances. I calculate the EV of sets and stuff like that. Sometimes sets are really high EV, or different box sets where it's like worth opening them for singles and things like that. You know, and then I help out the shipping department too sometimes. And I do kind of, since I've been there a really long time, I kind of know how to do everything. So sometimes, if we're short staffed in a certain area, I'll help out or what have you. But ultimately, my main purpose is just to make sure that we're stocked up on everything that we can be stocked up in.
So how do you calculate the EV of a set?
Oof,
or is that a secret?
No, I mean it's math really, but I mean you have to sort of decide the one thing that the information that I have has to do with the data, you know, because with our system we can see how many copies of a card have sold and how many we have left and things like that. So basically you make a spreadsheet of every mythic and every rare and every masterpiece and every uncommon, and you see, okay, you know, if I were to add, you know, if this card sells for $5 and we don't have any in stock, but we've sold 100 in the past like week, obviously it's a super hot card and everybody wants it. So if I had 30 more, then they would probably sell at that price, or, you know, and then you just sort of extrapolate the data and see what is the average value of a rare from an EV standpoint. Some rares are not worth anything and they're bulk, and some rares are worth a lot. And basically you calculate, well, if I open, you know, 144 packs, I'm going to get 26 mythics, 118 rares, one invocation, and however many uncommons and however many commons, and you just calculate, well, the average value of an uncommon is whatever, 2 cents, and a rare is like $1.50, and a mythic's like $7, and an invocation's like $50, and then you just sort of extrapolate the data. I mean, it's obviously, it's never really, I mean, Wizards, the market corrects itself, because if a set is worth like money to open, then all the big stores are just going to keep opening it until it's not. you know? And then, so when a set, that's why like prices tend to correct themselves to the point where like, if the cost of a booster pack is whatever dollars, and then the EV of the booster pack is going to be lower, and it's just going to always correct itself.
Yeah. Man, that's fascinating. The back end workings of a store is always kind of fun to dive into that and just see how things are run and how they keep things going. So that's pretty neat that you have such a integral part in, you know, making sure that the inventory is there and that you guys get the value that you need. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that in Magic you have level ups. What were some of your like level ups that you can look back on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is like sort of the whole thing about when I first talked about winning my first PTQ and then going to my first pro tour. And it's funny, I've like going to a Grand Prix and like, let's say making day two of a Grand Prix. I think, I remember there was a Grand Prix. I couldn't even tell you when it was, but it was Ravnica Guild Pack Ascension sealed deck. And I made day two of that. And I don't remember. I either didn't cash or I min cashed. And either way, like I was just super happy to have made day two.
Right.
And I'd say making day two of a Grand Prix is a level up. And obviously, then like making top eight of a Grand Prix is like a super big deal. And then winning a Grand Prix is just like still insane to me that it happened to me. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the level of like getting a top 16 plus of a pro tour, I haven't quite attained that yet, but I do plan on giving it my best shot, especially this year since, you know, I've got, with the whole team thing that's going on, I think it's going to be really sweet.
Yeah. Sweet. And, who have you looked up to along your way? Like, do you have any Magic mentors? You mentioned Alex, you know, a little bit earlier. In addition to him, are there any others, or has he been the one that's really kind of stood out to you?
Alex has been a really big mentor. There's been different mentors for different reasons, like Doug Potter.
Yeah.
More on the mental side. I haven't really actually tested with him that much. We did test together for one pro tour, but we didn't really like, we picked a deck that we felt was like good, and we didn't really like, you know, play against each other a lot, but he's been a big inspiration as far as like the emotional and mental aspects of Magic. And then there's the more technical stuff is Samuel Tharmaratnam, or Sammy T.
Yeah.
Has been, he's just like, I think that his, like the fact that he hasn't won a Grand Prix or top eight or pro tour is like criminal. I think that he's just so good, and he, every time I watch him play, I see him get like unbelievably unlucky and just punished, even though he's playing super well, but I'm sure he'll get there at some point. I mean, as far as pros go, like I still remember when I went to Grand Prix Pro Tour San Diego, my first pro tour, and I saw LSV walking in through the hall with some people, and I was like, oh my God, like LSV, like, I went and I introduced myself. I'm like, oh, like I'm a huge fan. And, you know, he signed my token and stuff. And then he went on to 16-0 that pro tour.
Oh, which wow. Was,
yeah, that was,
that's cool.
Unfortunately, he lost in the top four, but it was pretty sweet. I like Wafo Tapa a lot as far as like, and Nassif just as far as play style and stuff is concerned, but I haven't really like met them in real life. I just really like their decks. I like control, like do nothing decks and things like that.
Neat. So along your journey, you've had ups and downs just like every other Magic player. So I want to hone in on two stories. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that.
It's kind of, it's kind of tough. I've never had like a sort of all is lost moment. Like I treat every tournament like I go and I try to do well. And if I don't, I just go home and I don't really dwell on things. I've never had like a super bad experience. Like I think that like I'm very non-confrontational as a person. So if I like got in a situation where, you know, somebody was super angry with me for whatever reason, that would bother me a lot. But like, I think like, just Pro Tour Amsterdam in general was not great for me. I find I played Pyromancer Ascension, and I tested a lot. And this was, I think the format was extended, and it was kind of a bizarre format. Like, the most played deck was this, like, red-green, like, Blood Braid Elf Scapeshift deck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I remember I tested, my matchup against that deck was very good. And, yeah, there was one situation where, like, my opponent, I was basically, that was a very good matchup for me, but I lost to it twice in the tournament, and I was kind of, it kind of discouraged me. And there was a sort of a situation where my opponent, he cast Scapeshift, and then he just picked up, and I said, okay, sure. And he picked up his deck and he started taking lands out. But I called the judge because he didn't actually say, like, well, I'm sacrificing all my lands, or he didn't put his lands in the graveyard or anything. He just, like, picked up his deck and started taking lands out. And because you can cast Scapeshift and not sacrifice any lands. So the judge, like, ruled, yeah, like, you can't, you didn't sacrifice any lands. And then, like, I, like, bricked for my turn, and then he drew for his turn and just drew another Scapeshift and just did it, like, properly. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then, like, the draft, drafting at a Pro Tour and at Grand Prix is kind of weird, because you don't, usually when you draft with friends, you're just opening a box and, like, the print run is sort of one way. But, you know, I went at the Pro Tour, like, I went against a guy who had, like, four Marsh Casualties, which was, like, a bomb uncommon that, like, you don't usually see four of them in a draft. And then, like, my other opponent had something like seven Oran Reef Survivalists, which was, like, an ally that gets bigger, like, every time you play another ally. And so I O2'd that draft with a deck that I thought was pretty good. And, yeah, I went home feeling pretty discouraged. But, I mean, I was in Amsterdam, and I was with my girlfriend, so I didn't really let it, like, I find that, like, it's important to have other things in life than just Magic, because, like, when something goes wrong in Magic, I can just take a break for a little bit and do other stuff, and, you know, everything's going to be fine. But, yeah, as far as, like, a specific time where, like, I've never had an experience that really made me, like, question playing the game or anything like that.
But I really like how you just brought out, you know, that it's important to have other things in addition to Magic. So even though, you know, you went in and you shared, Pro Tour Amsterdam wasn't your best time because all these, you know, near misses and just, you know, the matchups and whatnot, you said, hey, I was still in Amsterdam. You know, I was with my girlfriend. Yep. And, like, you know, you had other things that you were able to look forward to and that you could enjoy so that you didn't get completely wrapped up in the outcome of the matches. So good on you. And that's pretty neat. That I was going to ask what you learned from that, but I think that was my biggest takeaway is having other things that you can, that you do enjoy, and, you know, having those things with you, or taking those things with you if you can, like, for example, the love of a new city, for example, and just exploring and being there. And so you can take that curiosity with you. It doesn't matter how you do in the event, you can still get out and do stuff. And obviously in your case, being able to, you know, be with a person that you enjoy to be with, and that also takes the edge off of things. So I think that's a really cool. So awesome. So the flip side, obviously, are highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Probably the one that happened recently, winning Grand Prix Toronto. Like, I'm still riding that high, and it was, like, probably like a month ago or something. I think that, like, well, generally, I mean, winning PTQs in the past was also great. Winning RPTQs, like, every time I've qualified for the Pro Tour, I've always had friends with me, like, watching my match over my shoulder. And as soon as I, like, do the game-winning, like, action, like, everyone is just so happy and cheering and, like, giving me hugs. And, like, I just think that that's the best part, honestly. Like, having friends who are really rooting for you. And then, like, when you get there, it just makes it so much better. Like, if I won Grand Prix Toronto and it was an empty room, like, I'd be like, okay, like, cool. Like, I won a Grand Prix, and obviously it would still be great. But, like, the fact that, like, I swung for lethal and then I had my friends there and everyone, like, you know, cheering for me, it was just, like, makes it so much better. Yeah. And, I mean, it's, I don't know, like, I know it's different around the world. Like, the PPTQ circuit is a lot different. Like, now, it's a little bit regrettable that since I'm bronze, I can't play PPTQs anymore, because that was something I kind of enjoyed doing on weekends, just going, like, to a random Magic tournament and playing.
Uh-huh.
But now, like, PPTQs are the only Magic tournaments around, so I can't play them. And winning a PPTQ, like, in Montreal especially, there are so many stores that every weekend there's practically like two PPTQs. There's one on Saturday and one on Sunday.
Dang.
And so winning a PPTQ really doesn't feel all that special because like if you are a serious player and you play in enough of them, like you're going to win at some point. It's really not a huge deal, which, you know, it's so there's ups and downs with this system, but like winning an old school PTQ was like it felt so much better because, you know, it's a one shot thing. You're on the pro tour. That's it.
Yep.
Now, like top fouring an RPTQ is similar to like winning a PTQ back then.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but obviously winning the Grand Prix was just fantastic. And every time I've qualified for a pro tour through a tournament, my friends were there. They've all been like fantastic.
That's great. And it contrasts to what I've heard other people say who qualified through like Magic Online, for example. And so they're playing and to them, they're like super into it and it's way intense and they win. And they're like, yeah. And then they're like the only person in the room. They're like, oh, okay. I mean, I still won and that's great, you know? So, but like you said, yeah. having the energy there, having your friends there you know, yeah. Like you said, if you would have won in an empty room, you still have been like, sweet, pro tour, like, let's go. But just having those other people there and that energy, I can see that definitely adding to the euphoria. So,
yeah, at least on with Moto PTQs, there's usually, like, if you're getting close, usually there's people watching you. And you can always post on Facebook and get some likes and comments. And that's pretty sweet, too.
Sweet. So how did you prepare for your Grand Prix? Let's dive into that. It was a limited Grand Prix, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So what does ideal tournament prep look like for you? And let's go with limited right now. How do you do that?
Honestly, I find that the way I prepared for this tournament, I felt like I made a bit of a mistake, to be honest, when I think about it more, because it kind of depends on how well you want to do. Because when I go to a Grand Prix, at least before I got this win, I would have been totally happy, like, min cashing or even just making day two would have been like, okay, sweet. Like, I had a good time. I got some free drafts. Like, it was a fun weekend. But so my goal for preparation was to jam sealed a lot more than jamming draft. And I did that with Moto leagues. I like leagues on Moto a lot more than drafting on Moto because of the league system. With a sealed, you're always going to play against a sealed. Like, it's the same thing as real life. But with a draft, you're going to play against a random person from a random pod with a random deck.
Mm.
So the preparation is not great. Like, if you actually want to test drafting, you either have to jump in real draft queues, which never fire, and it takes you a good 3 hours to complete one. Or you got to do it in real life, which takes organization and friends and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, I just did a lot of sealed decks on Moto, and I did do a number, like, I probably did 15-ish sealeds and, like, 8 drafts. So, I kind of knew, like, what I was doing. The thing with sealed is that, generally, sealed doesn't change that much from format to format. Like, you can kind of just gauge how fast the format is and what is a viable strategy, but, like, cards that are good and sealed are always good. Like, mana fixing is good. You kind of just need to realize how many colors you want to play and things like that. Drafting can be wildly different from format to format. And, I learned, like, a bit the hard way in the top 8 of Grand Prix Toronto that Doug Potter, who was my first round opponent, drafted an archetype that I had never seen before and turned out to be, like, ridiculously good. And he got very unlucky and I ended up winning, and then I was able to win my next 2 rounds. But he had clearly, well, he was part of the First Strike Nation group on Facebook, and they all, like, sort of knew about this red blue super low to the ground archetype, and the people, it seemed like a little bit undiscovered. And so that was like something that I misstepped with preparation. I think that, like, in the future, I'm going to spend more time on draft and more time talking to people about draft than I am with sealed.
Interesting. And Doug is also a past guest of the show. He's a really good, he's a good player too. So that's interesting how, like you said, you just ran up against an archetype that you really didn't know much about, and you know, you got a lucky break when we were able to make it. How do you find stuff like that? I guess, like you said, so he was part of a group and whatnot. Is it just kind of the collective mind and like you said, talking with other people that gets you clued into some of these new archetypes, or what do you think that process looks like?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's really like, because I've been very much of a lone wolf as far as my testing is concerned. I've always tested with different people, and I find that my testing has never been like that great as far as, you know, when you want to build, when you want to break a format or you want to learn a limited format really well. I find that I've never really been that good at testing stuff. But then, like, if you have like a hive mind of people who are jamming games on Modo and writing to each other and saying, okay, I just drafted this and it works super well, you should try it, I think that gives you a huge edge. Because like for Hour of Devastation, I did not talk to anybody at all about Limited. And like it worked out for me, but in the future I definitely want to know like potential things that I could be doing.
So as you have played what, thousands of games probably, and just all over the world, you said, against a wide variety of opponents, what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I think it's the most important thing is, I guess, lack of format knowledge as far as Limited goes. I see people walking into obvious tricks really often. I think you really have to know, like, when you're looking at a spoiler for a set and things like that, like obviously it pre-releases, people don't really know what's going on and that's fine. But like, you really need to know about cards that like destroy attacking creatures or blocking creatures, or like you need to know, like, I guess it has to do about reading your opponent. It's a little bit hard to explain, but I mean, it's just, you have to know the potential things that they could have and sort of really pay attention to when they're keeping mana up and for how many turns they're doing it and things like that, and kind of piece together what it is that you think that they have. Because sometimes I see people play and it's like so obvious that the opponent has Sandblast, and then he does something that like gets them 2-for-1 super easily. So yeah, I would say it's just has to do, well, that's more obviously Limited. But yeah, I think it's just format knowledge in general.
And so where do we start with that? Just memorizing, you know, instants in a set and just being familiar with it?
Yeah, unfortunately that, yeah, that's something that happens. I mean, like I play Modern online too a lot, and I just remembered like yesterday I played a game, I was playing Ad Nauseam, and I played against a guy who was playing blue-white like control, and he had like a Jace Architect of Thought, like online, he was drawing all kinds of cards. And then I had all this mana up, and then all of a sudden he goes end of turn, like tap out for Sphinx's Revelation. And I'm like, okay, you know, Angel's Grace Ad Nauseam. And as I was like going through my deck, he typed to me, he's like, oh, I didn't realize that Lightning Storm was an instant. So
yep,
it's things like that. Like, you know, Modern is a different example. You need to know those things, because like you need to know, like, okay, my opponent can go off at instant speed. Like, I'm not safe if I do this. So, you know, I guess no matter what the format is, if it's Limited, yeah, you got to know the tricks. I mean, knowing what creatures like come out on curve isn't really a big deal, because like you can kind of, unless it's like something like a Sand Strangler or something that does something when it comes into play, you kind of need to know, like, I think it's more important to know what kind of removal tricks and counterspells your opponent can have.
Yeah. Good stuff. And so what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Oh, geez. I play poker with a group of friends almost every week. And I think things like calculating odds is something like that. Like a lot of times when you're looking at a hand and you're thinking about mulliganing and stuff like that, I think that like something that I've learned, but I mean, it's different with poker than it is with Magic, but something like if you have a 2-land hand and you've got like a 3-drop and a 4-drop and a 5-drop or whatever, and like 2 like random tricks, just your odds, like you got to sort of calculate, okay, well, what are my odds of drawing a land in the next 2 turns? And you know, you have like 15 more lands in your deck, you have 33 more cards, and then you can sort of see, okay, I've got like a 42-ish percent chance of drawing a land next turn, and then after that you can, you know, then it becomes 15 over 32, and then you add them together. So, you know, you can do sort of math like that. But I mean, it's I would say that as far as like something technical, it's that. But then the other thing is just like, you know, the mental game and knowing that sometimes in Magic, just like in life, sometimes bad things happen that are out of your control, and you just gotta like keep going, you know, and don't like just give up and do nothing, like and be miserable.
Right.
Like just try to, even when things suck, like just try to stay positive and keep going.
So what's the biggest growth that you've seen in yourself that you've experienced from playing Magic?
Definitely like the mental and emotional sort of things. Like I said, like back, obviously when you're a kid, things are different, but I find that like I can go to a tournament and just like 0-3 and just still have a great time.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I've been with my girlfriend for 14 years. We're practically married. We're just like not on paper. But I mean, when I go to a Magic tournament and I come home, all that she cares about is like, did you have fun? And I mean, she doesn't, you know, whether I won, like she knows that when I win, it's great and I'm happy and stuff. But she'd ask me like, oh, did you have fun? And I think that that's important. And that's what I try to do. I mean, I hate waking up in the morning. I'm not a morning person. But, you know, when I have to be at work, I mean, I start work at 10, which is later than most people do. And it's still super hard. But at a Magic tournament, I have to be there at 9:30 or at 10 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And waking up and getting out of bed to go to a Magic tournament, I can do it easily.
Yeah.
And because I know I'm going to go and I'm going to play Magic and I'm going to have fun and my friends are going to be there and it's going to be great. And, you know, as long as you just keep looking at what's positive, you can really like grow as a person just like that way.
That's cool. So what are some of your shortcomings as a Magic player? Like what are you working on what are you shoring up?
Oh man, there's too many. basically I need to learn how to test better. I need to, I'm really, really bad when it comes to audibling. I'm always changing decks. I build a new deck on Magic Online like every week. Like yesterday when I told you I was playing Ad Nauseam, like I've been winning with Ad Nauseam a lot. And then yesterday I 0-3'd one league. And I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm done with that deck. I'm going to try something else, you know? Mm. And I find that like, well, obviously with Modern, it's such a weird format that it's hard to just pick one deck. But I find that like every Pro Tour I've played on, like 3 days before the tournament, I've switched decks like five plus times. And I find that it's really like, it's better to like, you know, find a deck that you're comfortable with and that you think might be good in the metagame and really like learn it super well, the ins and outs, the hands you can have, how to sideboard, all that stuff. So I think that's something I really need to work on is like, you know, testing better and not like panicking at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be the main thing.
So now that you recognize that you do that, what can you do or what are you going to do to not do that again, like switch 3 days before?
Well, now I'm a bit more prepared. As far as Pro Tour Ixalan is concerned, I have a group of friends that like we are testing together and they are good players and I respect their opinions. And we're going to try sort of a strategy to test properly.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had disastrous experiences at various Pro Tours where, you know, we test for 2 weeks and then the day before the tournament, everybody's playing a different deck and nobody knows what's going on and it's not fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're gonna like really like dissect decks and keep notes and, you know, I think that we have a pretty good plan.
Good. I was going to ask about that, you know, since Limited is your, you know, cup of tea and obviously Pro Tours have, you know, Standard, you mentioned Standard being one of your weak spots. I was going to say, hey, what are you going to do? Like, what are your plan for your upcoming Pro Tour? And it sounds like you've got a group together. You do have a plan. You're going to go through it in a, you know, methodical way and hopefully get better results out of it.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's all we can do.
So, yeah. Cool. So we've talked about Limited a little bit so far because it's your best format. And so what advice would you give to like a brand new limited player? Let's say someone who is, you know, just diving in to limited.
I would say like there's a lot of good data online. Like there's so many videos that are posted all the time, like Channel Fireball, Star City, things like that. Even Mana Deprived does a lot of draft videos and stuff like that. And you can really see with established formats, it gets a little bit like I get bored of formats really fast. Like I haven't drafted Hour of Devastation since the Grand Prix. Because I feel like, okay, I'm done with that now, because now the next thing that I need to focus on is Ixalan. Like, I tend to focus on the format that is going to help me in my next, like, major tournament.
Yeah.
So, I would say, you know, if you're interested in drafting the format now, like, look at some videos and go to FNM and just, just try things. You know, you don't have to win the first time. Like, if you open a suite, like, if you open like Fraying Sanity or something in Hour, just like pick that shit. Like just, you know, just give it a shot and try, you know, if you want to draft like something wacky, just try it and, you know, try to have fun. And if you really want to like get serious and win, then you can like look at articles that describe pick orders and things like that and archetypes and go from there, you know? Yeah.
So I guess I was going to say what's working right now in Hours, but you said that you haven't really dove into the limited aspect too much recently.
Not recently, but I think the format is solved. Yeah. Honestly, I think that it's I've been talking with people like Doug Potter and Rob Lombardi, and like like I said, the blue red deck I think is way better. It is the best limited archetype I've seen like in an extremely long time. I think that like if you get that deck, like blue red is so deep. Like I've seen drafts like where two people sitting next to each other are both drafting blue red and both their decks are still very good. And it's just you know, there's some very like Spellweaver Eternal and Crash Through is sort of the like bread and butter of the deck. I mean, they're both sort of inconspicuous cards that you see going around late very often, but you just pick like so many one drops and two drops and spells like Unsummon, Firebrand Archer, Blur of Blades. You know, you can get like, if you can get some open fires, fine, but like you really like your deck can be like 14 lands and just like, just blaze through your opponent. Like you can deal like 8 damage on turn 3. You know, it gets pretty ridiculous. And I think that like if I wanted to win a bunch of tournaments, I would just force that like every time with very few exceptions.
What about Sealed? What's working in Sealed for Hours?
I mean, Sealed is, you really just have to look at what you open, but it's a pretty slow format. If you can open a good aggressive deck, then it's good, but it's very hard to get a good aggressive deck in Hour. It's really, most of the decks are very mid-rangey or late game, but I would recommend, like, you really need to have a plan for bombs. You need to have a plan for gods, and in a Grand Prix, like, I remember I was telling people when I had my deck, I'm like, yeah, my deck is pretty good. I like it, but I don't have any way to beat Planeswalkers. And people were like, well, what are you talking about? Like, you can't beat Planeswalkers. Like, if they play it, you just lose. And, you know, I did go against Nicol Bolas twice. One time I won and one time I lost miserably. But, you know, you want to try to, like, for gods, you want to have either Final Reward or Puncturing Blast or whatever it is, the 4-mana 5 damage one. Yeah. You just need to have some sort of way to get out of tough situations.
Interesting. Man, good stuff. I always love diving into, you know, our guests' best format and their thoughts and take and whatnot. What do you think? Yeah. I mean, I guess there's not really much out right now, but just the feel of Ixalan, what do you think about that? Are you excited to go there? And what do you think?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm not really big on lore and stuff like that as far as sets go. I'm not like a Vorthos or anything, but I think that like pirates and dinosaurs is kind of cool, although like we did just do that in Hearthstone like last year, so it's kind of reminiscent. But I hope that the treasure mechanic is interesting and there's not I like it when limited mechanics break through into constructed. You don't really see it that often, but I think that there's potential. I feel like the format's going to be really aggressive, just based on the few number of cards that I've seen. But I don't know. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see where it goes and what happens. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. So good stuff.
Yep.
So you travel a lot and go to events all over the world. We've already mentioned that. So what do you actually take with you? What is inside your tournament bag?
My tournament bag?
Yeah.
It's just a regular tote bag. You get, when you go to the Pro Tour, they give you a super sweet tote bag that I've been using. I've gotten a few of them, and I tend to use it for every Magic event. I bring the minimum. I bring sleeves, a deck box, a pen, and a pad, and like a couple of dice. Sometimes I forget the dice. I will lose like 5 pens throughout the course of a tournament, so I just scavenge them off tables. Life pads is sort of the same deal. I don't tend to bring food for numerous reasons. I like just buying something there. I tend to, oddly enough, like every article that you read about going to tournaments say like, yeah, you know, stay hydrated and eat and all that stuff. And I kind of feel like I play worse after I've eaten lunch than like before. I find that when you're in like starvation mode, you have more of a like a survival instinct and you play better.
Nice.
Sounds a little weird, but yeah, I find I don't snack or anything like that. I'll just have one lunch after like round 3 or something, and that's it. And then I won't eat again until like if it's a Grand Prix, and after round 9 I'll go get dinner or something.
There you go, man. That's awesome. Yep. So what resources can you point us to when you are keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic? Where do you turn to?
I like the First Strike podcast, which my friends Rob Lombardi, Doug Potter, and Vince D'Agostino run with Carl Young Tom, or KYT. I really like, I'm friends with a lot of pros and just big people who are important in the Magic community, and usually I see things come up on Facebook. There's always a new hot topic in Magic. There's always drama, and it's kind of just an interesting like soap opera to be living in.
Yes,
and
true.
I like Reddit, the Magic subreddit, Magic TCG. For tournament decks, there's the Spikes subreddit as well, mtgtop8.com. There's so many places to go, but I mean, it's really based on what your flavor is, and I just heard of your podcast, and this is episode like 200 and something or other.
30,
so there's always
200,
yeah, there's always things going on.
So good stuff, man. And do you have any daily habits or things that you do on a regular basis that you feel contributes to your success as a Magic player?
not really. No, I mean, I play like almost every day on Magic Online. I think it's important to stay like a little bit sharp, but it's also good like to just take a break sometimes. Like usually when I win like a PPTQ early in the season, I tend to stop playing for a bit. I mean, now that this is like the lowest time for Magic for me right now, because I don't have any tournaments for like at least a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm just playing like I'm playing a bit of Modern here and there. Maybe I might build a Standard deck. But I mean, at this point, I feel like it's a little bit pointless since like the rotation's happening so soon. So it's really mostly just keeping as far as daily. Not really. I mean, I feed my fish and my pet chameleon and my geckos and my cat. I have a lot of pets, but I don't think that has much to do with my success.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, sweet, man. I've really enjoyed, you know, hearing your story, getting to know you, you know, better and your journey. I was going to ask what events you have coming up, but you said that you don't have any big tournaments for another month or so. And we obviously know that you're headed off to the Pro Tour here. So that's, you know, that's awesome. I'm going to wish you the best of luck in that. So that's cool.
Thanks a lot.
So just a quick reminder to the prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Robert, you can do so in the Facebook group. We're going to get him in there. You can say hello, ask him a question, say thanks for being on the show. Just tag him in the post, and that's where you can find him in the Pro Tutor Prodigy Facebook group. So, Robert, as we wrap things up, what is one last parting piece of guidance that you can leave with us? Either something that you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
just no matter how many times you lose, like, try to keep figuring out how you can get better and don't get too discouraged. I mean, that's really like the best piece of advice that you can get. And yeah, Magic Online is not a great program, but it is a very good way to test if you want to get to the next level.
And Robert, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Anderson. Thank you so much for being on the show, Robert. It was so fun to have you. Episode 230 is in the bag. And I hope that somebody caught that reference right there. Good stuff. You can get the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Robert Anderson. Of course, that's where you can go. And again, a huge thank you to the patrons who make the show possible. Without you, we would not have the show. And of course, as a thank you, I love giving out Magic-related product. This month, we're going to be giving out a Commander deck to the winner. So if you're a patron, good luck. And if you're not, but you want to be, go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can check that out. And thank you so much to Paragon City Games, the other proud sponsor of the show, who provides prize support, such as the deck that we'll be sending out. And I encourage you to check out their website at ParagonCityGames.com. Thank you so much for joining me. I love doing this show. Can't wait to do many more. We have some great guests lined up. We had 2 great Grand Prix last weekend and 2 more coming up this weekend, so a lot going on in Magic. Stay tuned to get out there and play some Magic. And as always, I am Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.